said, sir, we got back the x-ray. Everything's a blur. But it's all positive, that's what every single test shows. I went to the doctor said, kid, it was something that you ate and drank and something that you did. And it's all in your head, it's spreading on down to your toes. All right, let's spread it around a little bit now.
Hello, I'm Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and I do the Doctor's Inn radio show the third Thursday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m. And what I like to do is bring up subjects of health or medical-related issues and discuss them. Hopefully they are issues that you, the listeners, are interested in hearing about. If you, as a listener, would like to let me know a subject that you would like me to cover on this show, please email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. klogan.md@yahoo.com. First thing I wanted to let you know is you were just listening to The Doctor by Loudon Wainwright III. I don't say that often enough. I like that song. You need to know this, though, too. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Also, I would like to tell you who the underwriters for this show. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR's supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Clear Creek Healing Center announcing their summer camp schedule. The Yoga Camp for Girls is June 26th through 30th for ages 8 to 14. The Tuesday Neighborhood Summer Classes begin at 9 a.m. with beginning yoga and at 6 p.m. quiet meditation. For complete details and registration for Clear Creek Healing Center's summer camps, visit clearyoga.com or call Dr. Barros at 894-8756 and breathe. So today's show, let me tell you, the first half of the show, I'm going to talk about esophageal reflux, or the reflux of fluid from the stomach up the esophagus. And the reason I'm going to cover that is one of you listeners let me know on my email, klogan.md@yahoo.com, that you wanted me to do that subject. And so I'm going to do that for a few minutes. And then I'm going to talk to you about something that's happening next week, starting this coming weekend. And that is a diabetes camp for children here in Northern California called Camp McCumber. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. Then the second half of the show, we're going to have a guest on named Tom Reed. He's a community member here in Chico and a social activist, great guy, and a all-round great guy. And he's going to tell us about a bill that's making its way through the California State Legislature called SB 562, and that has to do with healthcare, and it has to do with the idea of single-payer healthcare for everybody equally in the state of California. That will be interesting. So that'll be at 6:30. Now let me go to that issue of esophageal reflux. So esophageal reflux, what in the heck does that mean? Esophagus, by the way, is our food tube. So, you know, when we swallow fluids or food, it goes down our throat and goes to our stomach. Well, to get from the mouth to the stomach, it goes through a tube called the esophagus. And fluid is supposed to move in one direction in the esophagus, that is, down the esophagus and into the stomach. Once the food and fluids are in the stomach, they ain't supposed to go back up the esophagus. They're supposed to be digested partially in the stomach and then move downstream into the small intestine, first part of the small intestine called the duodenum, or duodenum, some people say. So there's a little muscle ring or sphincter between the esophagus and the stomach. Right where the esophagus hooks to the stomach, this muscle ring is supposed to be taut or tight enough that it does not allow anything from the stomach to move back upward. When the sphincter is not working appropriately, however, then food or fluid can move retrograde or back upward. Well, and you might say, well, who cares? Well, you would care if it happens, because the contents of the stomach are acidic. The fluid that sits in the stomach is really acidic. It's the pH of the stomach is between 1.5 and 3.5. That's very acidic. That is what is required in the stomach relative to the digestion that begins in the stomach. It needs that acidity. And the stomach is able to handle that acidity just fine. It lives on that. I mean, that's fine there. The esophagus is not made for acid. It irritates and inflames the esophagus, which can give uncomfortable symptoms to you. But it also can give, if it's repetitive, it can make scarring happen, which can make the esophagus narrow down, and which can affect one's ability to swallow adequately. And it can also cause some little bleeding divots called ulcerations. And none of that is good. So another thing to mention is that symptoms, when fluid, acidic fluid, goes up the esophagus inappropriately, the symptoms can feel different relative to acid at the lower part of the esophagus near the stomach compared to the symptoms in the upper two-thirds of the esophagus closer to the mouth. And that's because the nerves that go to those two different areas near the stomach or the upper part of the esophagus are different nerve types. And so the symptoms that one would get if esophagus near the stomach has acid coming up in it from the stomach can be kind of more of a vague, achy, maybe hot, maybe nausea, but more vaguey, dull, achy kind of feeling. However, in the upper two-thirds of the esophagus, closer to the mouth, the symptoms are more exacting, more specific, and they can be kind of sharp pain and hot, and you can kind of point with your finger right where you're feeling it. It's more exacting kind of symptoms. All right. One thing I wanted to let you know, you might hear this term GERD, G-E-R-D, GERD. And just to let you know what that means, it's just another terminology for this esophageal reflux. And GERD stands for gastroesophageal reflux disease. We're all talking about the same thing. Now, there's another symptom that I think all of us should know about, and that is sometimes people who get esophageal reflux have cough from that. And you'd think, whoa, cough. I thought cough meant you have a lung problem or a respiratory problem. And the point there is that sometimes when reflux of acidy fluid coming up the esophagus can happen, for instance, at night when we're laying down flat and gravity is not working in our favor, You know, when we're sitting up or standing up, gravity is working to help us keep fluid in our stomach and not coming upward. However, when you're lying flat in bed, gravity is not working for you the same way, of course. And a person is somewhat more likely in their sleep to get some reflux of acid out of the stomach up the esophagus. And if it comes all the way up the esophagus and even the minutest amount, slightest amount, if it gets all the way up into our oral pharynx or the back of our throat, and even the slightest amount of that gets breathed down into our windpipe area, it can cause significant irritation because our windpipe area, our trachea and the parts of our respiratory system even below the trachea just don't like acid. They're very, very sensitive to that. So even the minutest amount can irritate the upper part of the trachea and our larynx, our voice box. And therefore, sometimes people with esophageal reflux can have cough because of that. Now, remember, there are many other potential causes of cough. You know, lung problems, even some heart problems can give us cough. So, cough can be complicated relative to figuring out the cause, and you might need a doctor or other healthcare provider to help you with that. But I just wanted you to know that sometimes cough can be related to esophageal reflux. Okay. What factors can aggravate esophageal reflux and make it more likely to happen in a person? Alcohol can loosen that sphincter, apparently, between the esophagus and the stomach and make reflux a bit more likely. Pregnancy can do that. Pregnant women are more likely to have reflux than other people. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories are not good for this. That can be a problem in the upper GI tract, including the lower esophagus and stomach. And non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, or NSAIDs, are things like aspirin, ibuprofen like Advil and other brands, Motrin, and naproxen, such as naproxen by prescription, or Aleve, which is a naproxen over-the-counter. All those things are potentially irritating to the stomach and can, when you have a problem like esophageal reflux, they can be an aggravating factor. Being overweight can be an aggravating factor. Then there are probably other aggravating factors that I'm unaware of. So, what do you do? How do you help yourself if you have esophageal reflux? One thing is, let me get this out of the way, avoid non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents such as aspirin, ibuprofen, and naproxen, like Aleve. And then monitor how alcohol affects this in your life so you can keep track of that and know how to adjust that alcohol intake if it's a problem in your esophageal reflux. If you're overweight, I'm telling you, and you have esophageal reflux, losing weight may help you. Then there are acid-lowering products like what we call H2 antagonists or histamine 2 antagonists, such as Pepcid and Tagamet, which is cimetidine, and Pepcid is famotidine, and then Zantac or ranitidine. These are over-the-counter products now, and they can help lower the acidity of the stomach so that when the fluid goes up the esophagus, it's less irritating, and it can help in the stomach if people have irritation in the stomach. And then there are some other products that are newer, that are even more stronger acid-lowering agents that we call proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, and that is like Prilosec, which is omeprazole. Those are over-the-counter now. One a day on those can help lower the acidity if people are really having a problem with reflux. Then there are liquid or chewable antacids, including baking soda, which can help. But the pros and cons of that are, if you're really having a really burning of the in the esophagus right now, and you want something immediately to cool that off or calm that down, then one of those liquid like Maalox Mylanta Amphigel, or chewable Maalox Mylanta, or baking soda can help you more immediately. They're not so good for helping you hours from now. If you do it now, some of those products can make you have a little more problem later. But for immediate help, they're a good idea. Again, baking soda is one of those. And then rarely surgery is needed to help that sphincter area. But that's where, and I'm not even sure what the specifics of the surgery are. It's rarely done. Okay, another thing I want to say about this is, when should you seek medical help if you have esophageal reflux symptoms? First of all, it's very common. Esophageal reflux is very common. But when to seek medical care? I think of it in this way. If someone has esophageal reflux symptoms that are not happening every day, all the time, but they're intermittent and they're relatively simply treated by avoiding ibuprofen for a while, if that was part of your problem, or temporarily using one of the acid-lowering agents that I was talking about, like Pepcid or Zantac or Omeprazole Prilosec, and after 2 or 3 days you're good, and you might stop them, and then you do well for, I don't know, a week or two or more, then I don't think you probably need medical care. However, if it persists, and or if you get help by using those acid-lowering agents, and then as soon as you stop them, bam, you're just back on with symptoms again, like within a day or two, then I think you should probably see your doctor or your other healthcare provider about this. The other thing that would prompt you to seek medical care is if your bowel movements were black, which we call melena, which is sometimes blood that is in the stomach area and then goes through the GI tract, and when it comes out in your stool, it's black, sticky, or frank blood with your bowel movements. Those are reasons to seek medical care. Any hint of blood or any blood in your stool, be it from the upper GI tract or the lower GI tract, you need to talk to your doctor or other healthcare provider. Let's see. If I could hint to you what other kind of things. Well, let me just say this. If any of those things are happening, then the type of evaluation you will need, and your healthcare provider can link you or hook you up with this, is something we call esophagogastroduodenoscopy, or EGD. And that's where a specialist who knows how to do this test looks with a fiber optic lighted tube thing down your throat, down your esophagus, and look at your esophagus and look at your stomach and look at that sphincter muscle ring between the stomach and the esophagus. And that kind of doctor is a gastroenterologist or a surgeon or some other physician, sometimes, depending on what part of the country you're in, will be able to do that test, the EGD test. We used to do upper GI x-rays where barium swallow, where you swallow some barium and look at the x-ray. It's just not, nowadays, it's just not detailed enough. So it's not standard of care currently. The upper GI x-ray barium swallow thing is not standard of care in my mind currently. You need to have an actual look by a specialist, because there are things such as esophageal cancer. There are things like ulcerations in the esophagus. There's something called Barrett's esophagitis, which is a type of cell that lines the abnormal cell type lining the esophagus that can predispose somebody to cancer of the esophagus. And those kinds of things are the kinds of things that would have persistent symptoms and not recover nicely with acid-lowering agents readily. And those are things that an EGD test by a specialist would be able to help figure out. Well, there you go. Hope that helped the listener and other listeners relative to information for esophageal reflux. How much time do I got for the first? I'm good. So I wanted to talk about diabetes camp. I got time to do that. So the diabetes camp up here in Northern California, first of all, let me say, when you look at California and you think about something like diabetes camp, what we're talking about is for children with, generally it's for children with type 1 diabetes. And throughout the state of California anyway, I don't know about other states, but the state of California, the only camp for kids with type 1 diabetes north of Santa Cruz area and I don't even know one. I think there's one in Reno area. And then the closest one down south would be in the lower Sierra. The camp up here in Northern California, we're very lucky to have this camp in the north part of the state. And it is called Camp McCumber. It's at a lake called Lake McCumber, which is 7 miles east of a little town called Shingletown on Highway 44. Highway 44 is the highway between Redding and Mount Lassen. And Camp McCumber is at about 3,000 feet. It's, again, about approximately halfway between Shingletown and Mount Lassen. It's in the high pines and high conifers. And it's 1 week each summer. It's in June. And it happens to start this weekend, this Sunday, for 1 week. It's a camp that's sponsored by the Lions Club. Again, with kids with type 1 diabetes, and type 1 is a more less common type of diabetes. These kids are all on insulin. The kids at this camp or Camp McCumber are from ages 8 to 17. You know, they're coming together with kids in a similar, at the camp, kids a similar lot in life. Where they have to give themselves shots of insulin throughout the day. They have to, or they're on an insulin pump gadget, and they have to poke their fingers repetitively throughout the day to tell that what their glucose level is, blood sugar level is. And this is not, this is something that is life-changing. And it's a very great thing to have all these kids together so they can hobnob and play with kids going through the same things in life that they're going through. I'm the medical director up there. I've been doing that for 23 years. The camp's been going for about 28 years. It's a Lions Club camp, Camp McCumber. You could Google that, Camp McCumber, diabetes camp for children with type 1 diabetes. If you wanted to support that financially, that'd be cool. Google it and figure out how you could support it. Or email me and I'll link you. And my email address, klogan.md@yahoo.com. Is it time for a break?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Is that camp open to anyone? How do people get, how do they get their children in that camp?
Yeah, it's open to anybody. We don't turn anybody away. I wish I had the website is a rather long and... I think the best thing to do is to Google Camp McCumber if you're interested in that, and or email me, and then I'll link you with the administrator, Bob Truax, who actually is a Lion, part of the Lions Club in Gridley. I'm very happy to do that. So anybody who's interested, has a child between the ages of 8 and 17 with type 1 diabetes and are interested in that camp, it's a little late for this year's camp, but hey, you email me, and I'll link you with information about the camp, klogan.md@yahoo.com. All right, let's take a little music break, and then we'll get back, and soon we'll have Tom Reed here, and we'll hear about SB 562 in the California State Legislature. Mm-hmm.
taking my medicine in over the weekend. My mind's fine, but my body feels weak. Call the doctor, I think I'm shaking. A shady lady took all my bread, ravaged my body long, messed with my head. I don't know, but I've had my feeling. Call a doctor and tell him I'm healed.
This is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. You were just listening to J.J. Cale and Call the Doctor. Nice work. So the second half of the Doctor's Inn show is going to inform us about a bill that's making its way through the California legislature called Senate Bill 562. And why that's a subject to be discussed on the Doctor's Inn radio show is because this bill has to do with a very unusual idea. When you hear this idea, you'll think, oh, wow, what's Dr. Logan talking about? Is he like from Mars or something? What's going on here? And the unusual idea is equal and appropriate health care for all of the citizens or residents in the state of California. Not just for some people who have money or have some ability financially to pay for their medical care through whatever thing, way they have to, whatever hideous path they have to get their medical care paid for. It's a smooth and appropriate funding way for all people in the state of California for appropriate health care. I know that was a weird thought, huh? Equal and appropriate health care for all of us in California, part of the United States. Anyway, hi, Tom. Tom
hey,
Reed.
Ken. Hey, Ken.
Thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be back.
Tom Reed, again, is a Chico resident. He is... I call you a social activist. Is that okay with you if I say that?
That's okay. I've been trying to hide it, but you know.
And I will tell you, I've known Tom for several years now, and this man is a wealth of knowledge relative to issues such as equal and appropriate health care for all people and the subject of single-payer health care. And he's an advocate and has been an advocate for, I don't know,
25 years.
So have I, but in the shadows. And Tom, tell us tell us what's going on in the political realm of in California right now relative to single-payer health care. Well,
can I start off with something just a little bit different, but it does relate?
Okay. Sure.
I was listening to KZFR this morning. No. I was listening to KCHO this morning.
Oh, KCHO,
NPR. Uh-huh. And they had a report on a study conducted by UNICEF, the United Nations Children Fund, looking into how well 41 different advanced countries take care of their adolescents. Wow. 41 countries were looked at in terms of access to medical care, exposure to violence, use of drugs, obesity, all those kind of issues.
In adolescents. 41 countries.
41 countries looked at. The U.S. came in 37th, got Fs on every score. And where Slovenia, for example, they said came in ninth. And you have to ask yourself, you know, why is it that the Slovenian people care about their adolescents and we apparently don't? I think it's one of the, it fits into the same concept of why other countries who provide universal health care care about their people and we apparently don't. So I'm going to, that struck me hearing that this morning. So
does it make you proud, Tom?
It makes me think there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, it makes me sad.
Yeah, it makes me sad also, but it's like, you know. So anyway, to get back.
Work to be done.
A lot of work to be done. So that gets us back to Senate Bill 562.
Senate Bill 562.
Senate Bill,
the state of California.
State of California, sponsored by Senators Lara and Atkins. If it becomes law, it will establish a single-payer Medicare for All system for all the people in California. Right now, it has made it through the state Senate.
It did.
Yeah, it's going to the state assembly, where there will be a hearing on the 14th of the. Just one moment here. One moment to dip my.
So it already made it through the Senate.
Made it through the Senate.
Excellent.
I think it was 23-17, and is now going to the Assembly Health Committee, where it will be voted on July 14th.
At the Assembly Health Committee.
The Assembly Health Committee,
okay,
right.
Then if it accomplishes that, then...
If it accomplishes that, if it passes there, it will then go to the Appropriations Committee, and we'll see what happens after that. At this point, there's a tremendous amount of enthusiasm for it and a tremendous amount of lies and misrepresentation. The lies and misrepresentation center around the supposed cost of the plan. There was a study done by the state which said that the people of California spend $400 billion for health care, which may be true. I've seen other estimates as low as $330 billion and $370 billion and so forth. But the impression that you get from listening to people like our assembly member, James Gallagher, who's been very outspoken on this, the impression you get is that this is going to be like new spending. And it's not. You see, we're already spending, and it's going to all be taxes. So the impression he's giving is that we're going to have a $400 billion tax increase here in California. That's nonsense. About two-thirds of that $400 billion we are already paying for, and money we pay for Medicare and Medi-Cal and other publicly funded programs. If we're successful in implementing SB 562, that money will come back to the state of California. So two-thirds of the cost of the program will be covered by taxes that we already pay. So that's not new taxes.
That's already going into health care in the United States through state and federal programs currently.
Exactly. Which leaves, you know, say $120, $130 billion to be accounted for, and there will be taxes to cover that.
Currently, that element of the medical care is coming out of our pockets.
Exactly. It's not
that it isn't coming out of our pockets currently.
It's coming out of our pockets and going into insurance premiums, into copayments, deductibles, out-of-pocket expenses, and so forth. And basically what the taxes will do to implement SB 562, the taxes will replace that. So the average California family, this is based upon a study conducted back at the University of Massachusetts, the average average California family will actually save about 9% a year. Plus, we will cover everybody. We'll cover all Californians, including undocumented persons, documented, undocumented, all ages, all races, all genders, all et cetera. We'll all be provided all necessary medical services, free choice of doctor, and we will pay for this through taxes, and we will be able to control costs through the elimination of the insurance industry's involvement in healthcare financing, through the negotiation of drug rates with the pharmaceutical company.
Which is part of this bill.
Exactly. the elimination of administrative waste, and also through rational healthcare planning. You know, just use MRI machines as an example. Let's say your community is large enough that one would make sense. Well, you may have none, or you may have five at this point. Without some kind of planning, there's no way of allocating those kind of costs in a way that really makes sense. Whereas if we have a statewide program,
a coordinated program,
we can make certain that if your community needs one and my community needs one, we can each have one instead of you having none or me having five. Mm-hmm. So the ability to do this is there. And when people criticize this and say it won't work, my question is this: if every other country in the world can do it, why can't we? I mean, are Americans inherently stupid? Are we gullible? Or what's wrong with us that if other people can do it, we can't do it? In terms of the taxes, well, right now the plan would be to have a sales tax, excluding groceries and other necessities, of about 2.3%. We'd also have a tax on a company's revenues of about 2.3%, excluding the first $2 million. We don't want to wipe out small businesses, so we want to put... We want to basically transfer some of the wealth that's been going to the top echelons of our economy and bring that back down and put it to work providing health care for all of us. We've been having, as I'm sure you and all your listeners know, over the last 30, 40 years, we've been having this incredible concentration of wealth and power at the top of our society. We'd like to reverse that just a little bit to make sure that that we actually have progressive taxation to finance all these medical services.
And now this bill actually doesn't deal with the funding element of that. Is that correct?
It doesn't. No, the bill that we have
Bill 562
is not.
But in the near future, that will be a subsequent bill.
Correct. And that'll be tougher because we need a two-thirds vote for a dollar bill.
We need a majority for this one.
Majority to pass this. We need two-thirds to put it into effect because it's a tax bill.
Yeah.
So people get the idea. It wasn't that Laura and Atkins, the co-sponsors of the bill, were trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. We simply hadn't gotten the results back yet from Robert Pollan, the professor who was running the program back at the University of Massachusetts. And they wanted to get the things moving, so they put it in place, like lots of bills are. They put it in place kind of in sort of a skeletal kind of form because there was no money attached to it. There's now a program, and I've heard people criticizing the idea of a 2.3% this and a 2.3% that. All that's negotiable. And if you have a good idea, let us know. The idea is that we want something that's progressive and that will adequately fund the healthcare system. And beyond that, as far as I know, everything else is on the table. So if people criticize one particular aspect of funding, we're all ears.
You know, our representative, what's his name again?
Jim Gallagher, yeah.
Jim Gallagher. Gallagher?
Gallagher, yeah.
Him talking about, calling the funding of this kind of a project to be calling it a tax. Well, guess what? I pay taxes every month to an insurance company. I quote unquote get paid. I pay them hundreds of dollars every month for for actually nothing at this point because I have a significant deductible, and they're a for-profit health insurance company. So for Gallagher to insinuate that this would be new money, no, it's changing. The money is being spent already by the citizens,
right.
and into a mess, into a healthcare system that is very sloppy, and gives us the outcome, like you just said in the beginning, that you heard on KCHO, where we were 37th out of 41 relative to adolescent healthcare availability in this country. That's disgusting. It's sloppy and it's inappropriate.
Well, and what you have going here is you have reactionaries like Gallagher, and you have interests like the insurance company, the pharmaceutical industry, and so forth. Their whole strategy is twofold. One is to confuse people.
Sure.
And secondly is to frighten people.
With ignorance stuff. It makes me think about the Trump campaign.
Oh.
ignorance is utilized right. readily by these wealthy companies like that. I mean, the way the system is now, it's kind of like the goose that laid the golden egg. Well, whoever has that golden egg, the goose that lays the golden egg, they're gonna fight if right. their goose golden egg is being taken from them. They're for-profit companies,
and they have a tremendous. You know, they're among the richest countries in the world. They have intensive lobbying programs in Sacramento and in Washington, and they will stop at nothing. They must know that the policies that they are promoting cause the death of 20,000-25,000 Americans each year. They cost. This is the only country. You know this. This is the only country where people actually become bankrupt. Thousands upon thousands of people a year because of medical costs.
Yeah.
Germany, zero. Britain, zero. France, zero. Taiwan, zero.
Yeah, they think we're weird. Yeah. They think we're unusual.
You may have seen, remember Michael Moore's movie, what was it called? Oh, Sicko, yeah, years ago. And Moore interviewed this, I think it was a French physician. That might have been an English physician, but this other country mm-hmm. physician. And he heard about the fact that Americans go bankrupt because of medical mm-hmm. expenses, and this guy was appalled. He couldn't yeah. believe it. He said, you know,
it just doesn't make sense to him, did it?
Our whole view is that if a person is sick, that's enough of a burden on their family and them. Yeah. They don't need to go bankrupt at the same time.
It's a hideous idea, isn't it?
A hideous idea. It's inhuman, and it is.
Yeah.
But it's not. Beyond, again, some of the reactionaries, the Trumps and the Gallaghers in this country, and the special interests that they mm-hmm. represent. You know, back in the 1970s, when Canada first implemented its single-payer system, at that point, and I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but at that point, the U.S. and Canada spent about the same amount on health care, very close to the same. And they had very close to the same life expectancy, male and female.
You mean per capita?
Yeah.
Per capita spending?
Right, per capita, or as a percentage of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Thanks for pointing it out. But at now, 40 years later, the U.S. spends half again as much as mm-hmm. Canada does. Mm-hmm. We have lower life expectancy for women and for men, and we still don't cover all of our people and don't provide comprehensive care for many of the people who do have some kind of insurance coverage.
You know, if I was a plumber or I was a carpenter and I heard this kind of data in the work I was doing, I'd say, this needs to be fixed.
No kidding.
This ain't working right.
Yeah.
How come? Let's look at how Joe next door does his house.
Right.
Oh, hey, let's do it. Works elsewhere. Wow.
And there are a number of countries. In fact, virtually every advanced capitalist democracy has some kind of a system. And there are three or four different models. The ones that we're going here is one that's very close to Canada's, very close to Taiwan's. The other two real models are either the British, Swedish, Spanish systems, which really are socialized medicine. This is actually a socialized financing. Socialized insurance is not socialized medicine.
Socialized financing. It's not a socialized medicine.
Yeah. There's
an important thing to say. Let's say it again. Go ahead, say it again.
Okay. The single payer system that we are proposing is not socialized medicine.
It's not socialized medicine.
Now, I want to be clear that I have no principled objection to socialized medicine. That works really well
some
for a lot of countries.
Though. Yeah,
some people do.
And this ain't that.
And this ain't that. This ain't that. This is basically socialized
funding. Correct.
Right.
And
democratic coordination of the healthcare financing system.
Yeah.
There's another model too. For example, like what they have in France, where there are private insurers. But the private insurers sell basically identical policies, and they're
not for profit.
Right. They're not for profit organizations where their CEOs probably make. I don't know, $500,000 a year instead of $50 million a year.
Yeah,
that's counting stock options
benefits,
and so forth.
Yeah.
And so, but that's not unusual in the U.S.
Right.
So where we're at. excuse me. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the SB 562. So as I looked over the bill, the basic standard. Goal comes out of the bill, which is residents in the state of California, regardless of, by the way, immigration status,
correct.
are covered equally health care compared to everybody else. We're all equally covered. We all have access to whatever doctors, whatever labs, whatever hospitals we choose. It's all the there's no restrictions.
Right.
That's another one point. Then the other point that I noted in the bill, that which is another major problem, obviously, in this country, is the cost of pharmaceuticals,
right.
The cost of prescription medicine, and over-the-counter some products. So that's another thing that this bill is attacking.
Correct.
Trying to
that's correct.
Bring control of that.
Right.
And we all want that. And there is nothing.
We don't all want that. The pharmaceutical industry
oh,
doesn't
right.
want that.
Pharmaceutical
yeah.
industry.
And they have a lot more lobbyists than you and I do.
You know what? I was going to go off on a little tangent about insulin. The cost. I see a lot of diabetes.
Sure.
So the cost of insulin bottles, ridiculously costly per bottle, hundreds of dollars per bottle. So that a person without insurance or with underinsured has mm-hmm. Bela. They either don't have insulin for the month, or they have minimal insulin for the month,
right.
And their blood sugars are too high. They get the complications. We have figures in as a country where our complications of our illnesses or medical conditions are high compared to other countries. And like, I wonder why. Well, it's obvious. The care that's appropriate and standard is not available equally to all of us appropriately.
You know, I'm
in this capitalistic system that we have. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to follow up on that. I'm a vocational consultant. I do a lot of work with Social Security disability hearings. And I heard a guy testify a few months ago, a fellow with a seizure disorder, and he said he was cutting his seizure medications in half.
Hmm.
And I winced because I happened to know that the medication he was cutting in half, if you reduce what the doctors prescribed, it makes your seizures worse. So the guy was taking a medication, because he didn't have the money for the entire medication, he was actually taking medication that would make him more likely to have seizures than less likely. I was able to informally kind of get the information back to him.
Mm-hmm.
But you see that kind of stuff happening all the time around here. What 562 would do, it would have the state of California negotiate with pharmaceutical companies, just like the VA does.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Prop 61 would have done last year, had mm-hmm. it passed, which mm-hmm. was on the ballot and was defeated essentially, by lies. Misrepresentations. But if we negotiate with the pharmaceutical industry like we do with the VA, the federal government does, the VA does mm-hmm. with those pharmaceutical companies,
mm-hmm.
We would save 30-40%
wow.
in the price of the pharmaceuticals.
Well,
the
that's pharmaceutical, billions of dollars.
Exactly. The pharmaceutical industry is always, year after year, one of the two or three most profitable
mm-hmm.
Industries in the country, and I would say one of the two or three most heavily subsidized. You know, they argue that they need a lot of money because they do all this research. You probably know this, but the most fundamental research is carried out by the National Institutes of Health or universities or foundations, and then the medication is provided. The copyright for the stuff is provided to the insurance companies, pretty much. Not free, but
low,
well below market value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
did I say copyright? I meant patent.
Yeah, inappropriate.
Yeah,
it's to the detriment of the people of the country.
Yeah.
The rich get richer, the poor gets poorer, and the multitude of the country not only get poorer, but they really poorer as in their health gets poorer.
Right.
Is poorer. We don't match up. In the United States, compared to other countries in the world. Wow.
So before I run out of time here, I'd like to... Do you need to take a break?
No, okay. We're fine.
Okay. Before I run out of time, I want to make sure that I encourage people to do a certain number of things. Okay.
Yeah, I think you got another 7 minutes.
Okay.
You got plenty of time.
We're trying to get this through... trying to get it through the Assembly Health Committee, so mm-hmm. I'd like to encourage people to make some telephone calls expressing support for Prop 562, or Senate Bill 562. And the first will be to Assemblyman Jim Gallagher. He's not likely to help us, but we want to at least make him uncomfortable. He's a reactionary Republican representing us here in the 3rd District.
And district Republican third here in our state
county,
legislature. To give an opinion to his office, if you favor... Senate Bill
562, yeah.
You could contact Gallagher's office by and let his and give that opinion.
Absolutely.
And add the numbers up of phone calls in his office.
Exactly.
Anyway, how would they do that? How would a listener do that?
Well, the way they would do that would be to pick up a telephone. Pick up their cell phone.
Yes.
And call 916.
916-319-2003.
2003.
And I'm going to say that number again.
Yeah, I'm going to ask people to hang on to a pencil because I'm going to give them three or four phone numbers here.
Okay, so that's Gallagher's.
Gallagher's 916-319-2003. The other two people who are particularly important are the Speaker of the Assembly, the top Democrat in the Assembly, the top Assembly person, whose name is Anthony Rendon. That's R-E-N-D-O-N. And you can contact Assemblyman Rendon at 916-319-2063. And the final person in the Assembly is the Chair of the Health Committee. So we want to contact our Assembly person, the Speaker of the Assembly, and the Head of the Health Committee. And the head of the Health Committee is Jim Wood.
Jim Wood.
W-O-O-D.
That's funny. We have a doctor in town, Jim Wood. It isn't Dr. Wood, is it?
Yeah. This is his day job, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
So Wood's phone number is 916-319-2002. 916-319-2002. If you misplace these phone numbers, just call the Capitol in Sacramento, and they'll give them to you. Or you can simply Google them and pull them off the internet. I also wanted to encourage people. We're circulating petitions. The Butte County Healthcare Coalition and our friends are circulating petitions advocating for single payer healthcare. We need help with that. So if you're interested in helping us with that project, call Norma at 896-1609.
So that's Norma?
Norma.
Call Norma at what number?
896-1609.
And that's to help circulate...
That's circulating petitions. In fact, we have people over at
the
farmer's market. I walked past our booth just a few minutes ago. We're doing the farmer's market Saturday, farmer's market Thursday, and any other kind of venues where we can find.
And you said the name Butte County Healthcare Coalition.
Correct.
What is that organization?
Butte County Healthcare Coalition is an organization that I actually founded in 1991, a long time ago now.
Grassroots.
Grassroots organization.
Organization here in our area, Chico-based, but our area.
We're now a 501c3, c4. We're a nonprofit organization. We have no paid people, all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been fighting for single-payer universal health care for almost 26 years now.
Wow.
So we've been plugging along for quite
Never
a while.
Never say die.
That's it. That's it. You
don't let
them grind you down.
Yeah.
So we're also looking for organizational endorsements. So if you belong to a professional association or a business association, religious association, whatnot, you also can talk to Norma about getting endorsement forms.
Okay, and Norma, who is a officer in the Butte County Healthcare Coalition.
Yeah, she's presently the president.
And what's her telephone number again?
It's Norma Wilcox,
896.
896-1609.
All right, good.
We're also looking for any speaking opportunities to talk about SB 562 and about single-payer health care, Medicare for All in general.
At your organization's meetings, if you had a club or an organization that wanted
a
speaker?
Yeah, or just invite some of your friends over. You know, have a little get-together.
Or at the house.
Drink some coffee, and we'll speak to anywhere from 3 people to 3,000 people, so just let us know.
Who would do the speaking?
Oh, we have probably a dozen people.
From your Butte County Healthcare Coalition?
Myself, Norma, her husband, Forrest, Paul O'Rourke Babb, who's an active nurse practitioner, David Welch, who's actually is on the National Board of the California Nurses Association.
He's a registered nurse in town,
He's an RN in town, but we have probably any one of 10 or 15 people would be able to handle that. And, again, we're always looking at an opportunity to speak with anybody who will listen to us. And I'd like to just, last of all, give my phone number. So if anybody would like to become involved or needs more information, my name is Tom Reed. That's in my phone number, 530-966-3414.
So Tom Reed, social activist, community member in Chico, very, very knowledgeable in single-payer health care and knowledgeable in about this Senate Bill 562. It was willing to talk to you on the phone and
that's 966
966
3414
3414.
And more than willing, I would love people to call me.
Yeah, the interest is out there.
Anybody who wants information or would like to become involved, you can call Norma or you can call me.
Yeah. Gosh. Thank you so much, Tom, for being here. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate what you
Thank
do
you,
in this world of ours.
It's been a pleasure. I'm sure we'll do it again sometime.
Thank you. And thanks to Ray Lager for running the controls on this show, too. Thank you, Ray. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Tim Kemper of Stanford Mortgage. Tim is a proud supporter of KZFR. To learn how Tim can help make your dreams come true, visit his new website, timkemperloans.com. And that's Tim Kemper is K-E-M-P-E-R. So timkemperloans.com or by calling 530-571-7723, MLO number 977542, an equal housing opportunity. And by locally owned and operated Rescue Technology, Rescue as in R-E-S-Q, Technology Solutions, providing on-site and remote computer repair, maintenance, and security, serving all of Northern California since 2002. Rescue Technology Solutions offers on-site and remote support, monthly maintenance services, PC repair, and virus removal. For more information, visit rescuetech.net and rescue, again, R-E-S-Q-tech.net or call 888-817-2667. Again, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Thank you for listening to The Doctor's Inn. I'll see you back 1 month from today at 6 o'clock. Stay tuned for Beatle Nation.
And I don't need no doctor because I know. To be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, no. Or prescription to be filled.
I don't need no doctor.
I
don't need no doctor.
All in my baby's arms. I could take away these chills. All these chills.
Peace.